The steps wound up the mountain. High above, they could see the gleam of masonry. And just where the steps curved and disappeared for the first time, an elder tree. It looked like any ordinary tree, but it became a symbol for them. There was their initial antagonist. How would it fight? Alric placed a booted foot on the first step. It was high, built for the feet of a giant. He began to climb, the other three following behind him. Now, as he reached the 10th step, he unsheathed Stormbringer, felt it quiver and send energy into him. The climbing instantly became easier, and as he came closer to the elder, he heard it rustle, saw there was an agitation in its branches. Yes, it was clearly sentient. He was only a few steps from the tree when he heard Divum Slorm shout, "Gods, the leaves! Look at the leaves!" The green leaves, their veins seeming to throb in the sunlight, were beginning to detach themselves from the branches and drift purposely towards the group. One settled on Alric's bare hand. He attempted to brush it off, but it clung. Others began to settle on different parts of his body. They were coming in a green wave now, and he felt a peculiar stinging sensation in his hand. With a curse, he peeled it off, and to his horror he saw that tiny pinpricks of blood were left where it had been. His body twitched in nausea, and he ripped the rest from his face, slashing at others with his rune sword. As they were touched by the blade, so they shriveled, but were swiftly replaced. He knew instinctively that they were sucking not only blood from his veins, but the soul force from his being. With yells of terror, his companions discovered the same thing. These leaves were being directed, and he knew where the direction came from, the tree itself. He clambered up the remaining steps, fighting off the leaves, which swarmed like locusts around him. With grim intention, he began hacking at the trunk, which gave out an angry groaning, and the branches sought to reach him. He slashed them away and then plunged Stormbringer deep into the tree. Sods of earth spattered upwards as the roots threshed. The tree screamed and began to heel over towards him as if in death it sought to kill him also. He wrenched at Stormbringer, which sucked greedily at the sentient tree's life stuff. Failed to tug the sword out and leapt aside as the tree crashed down over the steps, barely missing him. One branch slashed his face and drew blood. He gasped and staggered, feeling the life draining from him. He stumbled back to the fallen tree and saw that the wood was suddenly dead and the remaining leaves brown and shriveled. "Quickly," he gasped as the three came up. "Shift this thing, my sword's beneath, and without it I'm dead." Swiftly they set to work and rolled the tree over so that Alric could weakly grasp the hilt of the sword still embedded therein. As he did so, he almost screamed, experiencing a sensation of ecstatic power as the tree's energy filled him, pulsed through him, so that he felt like a god himself. He laughed as if possessed by a demon, and the others looked at him in astonishment. "Come, my friends, follow me. I can deal with a million such trees now." He leapt up the steps as another shoal of leaves came towards him. Ignoring their bites, he went straight for the second elder and drove his sword at its centre. Again this tree screamed. "Divum Slorm," he shouted, drunk on its life force. "Do as I do. Let your sword drink a few such souls and we're invincible." "Such power is scarcely palatable," Rakia said, brushing dead leaves from his body as Ulrich withdrew his sword again and ran towards the next. The elders grew thicker here, and they bent their branches to reach at him, looming over him, their branches like fingers seeking to pluck him apart. Divum Slorm, a trifle less spontaneously, imitated Ulrich's method of dispatching the tree creatures, and soon he too became filled with the stolen souls of the demons imprisoned within the elders, and his wild laugh joined Ulrich's as, like fiendish woodsmen, they attacked again and again, each victory lending them more strength, so that Moonglum and Rakia looked at each other in wonder and fear to see such a terrible change come over their friends. But there was no denying that their methods were effective against the elders. Soon they looked back at a waste of fallen, blackened trees spreading down the countryside. All the old, unholy fervour of the dead kings of Melniboné was in the faces of the two kinsmen as they sang ancient battle songs, their twin blades joining the harmony to send up a disturbing melody of doom and malevolence. His lips parted to reveal his white teeth, his red eyes blazing with dreadful fire. His milk-white hair streaming in the burning wind, Ulrich flung up his sword to the sky and turned to confront his companions. "Now, friends, see how the ancient ones of Melniboné conquered man and demon to rule the world for 10,000 years. Moonglum thought that now Ulrich merited the name of Wolf, gained in the West long since. All the chaos force that was within him had gained complete control over every part of him. He realized that Ulrich was no longer split in his loyalties. There was no conflict in him now. His ancestors' blood dominated him, and he appeared as they must have done ages since when all other races of mankind fled before them, fearing their magnificence, their malice, and their evil. Divam Slorm seemed equally as possessed. Moonglum sent up a heartfelt prayer to whatever kindly gods remained in the universe that Ulrich was his ally and not his enemy. They were close to the top now, Ulrich and his cousins springing ahead with superhuman bounds. The steps terminated at the mouth of a gloomy tunnel, and into the darkness rushed the pair, laughing and calling to one another. Less speedily, Moonglum and Rakia followed, the red archer knocking an arrow to his bow. Ulrich peered into the gloom, his head swimming with the power that seemed to burst from every pore of his body. He heard the clatter of armoured feet coming towards him, and as they approached, he realised that these warriors were mere human beings. Though nearly 150, they did not daunt him. As the first group rushed at him, he blocked blows easily and struck them down, each soul taken making only a fraction of difference to the vitality already in him. Shoulder to shoulder stood the kinsmen, butchering the soldiers like so many unarmed children. It was dreadful to the eyes of Moonglum and Rakir as they came up to witness the flood of blood which soon made the tunnel slippery. The stench of death in the close confines became too much as Ulrich and Divam Slorm moved past the first of the fallen and carried their attack to the rest. Rakia groaned. "Though they be enemies and the servants of those we fight, cannot bear to witness such slaughter." "We are not needed, friend Moonglum. These are demons waging war, not men." "Aye," Moonglum agreed, disquieted. They broke out into the sunlight again and saw the castle ahead, the remaining warriors reassembling as Ulrich and Divam Slorm advanced menacingly, with malevolent joy towards them. The air rang with the sounds of shouting and steel clashing. Rakia aimed an arrow at one of the warriors and launched it to take the man in the left eye. "I'll see that a few of them get a cleaner death," he muttered, knocking another arrow to the string. As Ulrich and his cousin disappeared into the enemy ranks, others, sensing perhaps that Rakia and Moonglum were less of a danger, rushed at the two. Moonglum found himself engaging three warriors and discovered that his sword seemed extraordinarily light and gave off a sweet, clear tone as it met the warriors' weapons, turning them aside easily. The sword supplied him with no energy, but it did not blunt as it might have, and the heavier swords could not force it down easily. He guessed the spell to be Separatus's work. Rakia had expended all his arrows in what had been an act of mercy. He engaged the enemy with his sword and killed two, taking Moonglum's third from behind with an upward thrust into the man's side and through to his heart. Then they went with little stomach into the main fray and saw that already the turf was littered with great many corpses. Rakia shouted to Ulrich, Stop, Elric, let us finish these. You have no need to take their souls. We can kill them with more natural methods. But Elric laughed and carried on his work. As he finished another warrior, and there were no others in the immediate area, Rakia seized him by the arm. Elric. Stormbringer turned in Elric's hand, howling its satiated glee, and clove down into Rakia. Seeing his fate, the Red Archer sobbed and sought to avoid the blow, but it landed in his shoulder blade and sheared down to his breastbone. Elric, not my soul too. And so died the hero, Rakia the Red Archer, famous in the Eastlands as the saviour of Tanalorn, cloven by a friend's treacherous blade. And Elric laughed, until realisation came and he tugged his sword away, though it was too late. The stolen energy still pulsed in him, but his grief no longer gave it the same control over him. Tears streamed down his tortured face and a great groan came from him. Rakia, will it never cease? On opposite sides of the slain-strewed field, his two remaining companions stood regarding him. Divam Slorm had done with killing, but only because there were none left to kill. He gasped, staring around him half in bewilderment. Moonglum stared at Elric with horrified eyes, which yet held a gleam of sympathy for his friend, for he knew well Elric's doom, and knew that the life of one close to Elric was coveted by Stormbringer. There was no gentler hero than Rakia, he said. No man more desirous of peace and order than him. And then he shuddered. Elric raised himself to his feet, turned to look at the huge castle of granite and blue stone which waited in enigmatic silence as if for his next action. On the battlements of the topmost turret, he could make out a figure which could only be the giant. In silence, he led the other two through the open portal of Mordaga's castle and was immediately in a rich and barbarically furnished hall. Mordaga, he cried, we have come to fulfill a prophecy. They waited impatiently until, at last, a bulky figure came through a great arch at the end of the vast hall. Mordaga was as tall as two men, but his back was bent. He had long, curling black hair and was clad in a deep blue smock, belted at the waist. Upon his great feet were simple leather sandals. His black eyes were full of sorrow, such as Moonglum had only seen before in Elric's eyes. Upon the sad giant's arm was a round shield which bore upon it the 8 amber arrows of chaos. It was of a silvery green colour and very beautiful. He had no other weapon. I know the prophecy, he said in a voice that was like a lonely roaring wind. But still I must seek to avert it. Will you take the shield and leave me in peace, human? I do not want death. Elric felt a kind of sympathy for sad Mordaga, and he knew something of what the fallen god must feel at this moment. The prophecy says death, he said softly. Take the shield. Mordaga lifted it off his mighty arm and held it towards Elric. Take the shield. Take the shield and change fate this once. Elric nodded. I will. With a tremendous sigh, the giant deposited the chaos shield upon the floor. For thousands of years I've lived in the shadow of that prophecy, he said, straightening his back. Now, though I die in old age, I shall die in peace, and though once I did not think so, I shall welcome such a death after all this time, I think. The whole world seems to sigh for death, Elric replied. But you may not die naturally, for chaos comes and will engulf you, as it will engulf everything unless I can stop it. But at least it seems you'll be in a more philosophical frame of mind to meet it. Farewell, And I thank you, said the giant, turning, and he plodded back towards the entrance through which he had come. As Mordaga disappeared, Moonglum dashed forward on fleet feet and followed him through the entrance before either Elric and Divam Slorm could cry out or stop him. They heard a single shriek that seemed to echo away into eternity, a crash which shook the hall, and then the footfall returning. Moonglum reappeared in the entrance, a bloody sword in his hand. It was murder, he said simply. I admit it. I took him in the back before he was aware of it. It was a good quick death, and he died whilst happy. Moreover, it was a better death than any of his minions tried to meet to us. It was murder, but it was necessary in my eyes. Why? Said Elric, mystified. Grimly, Moonglum continued. He had to perish as fate decreed. We are servants of fate now, Elric, and to divert it in any small way is to hamper its aims. But more than that, it was the beginning of my own vengeance taking. If Mordaga had not surrounded himself with such a host, Rakia would not have died. Elric shook his head. Blame me for that, Moonglum. The giant should not have perished for my own sword's crime. Someone had to perish, said Moonglum steadfastly, and since the prophecy contained Mordaga's death, he was the one. Who else here could I kill, Elric? Elric turned away. I wish it were I, he sighed. He looked down at the great round shield with its shifting amber arrows and its mysterious silver-green colour. He picked it up easily enough and placed it on his arm. It virtually covered his body from chin to ankles. Let's make haste and leave this place of death and misery. The lands of Ilmiora and Vilmia await our aid, if they have not already wholly fallen to chaos.